All right, welcome to our first ever D1 softball podcast. Rhiannon Potke and Tara Henry, welcome to the program. Can't believe this is our first podcast.
I know. Look at we, you know, this whole pandemic year, everything's just wild and crazy. Might as well drop a podcast and everything, right? Because, it's long overdue. We had planned to do it during, like I said, the season, but something that canceled the season also canceled our podcast launch for a little bit. So, but now is a great time to do it, especially this week with a lot of recruits entering the fold and stuff. So we'll have plenty to talk about.
Yeah, so we'll get right into it. Let's start with a September 1 contact date. I mean, I talked to numerous head coaches, numerous recruits, and they're all staying up to midnight to get their phone call from their respective colleges. What are your thoughts regarding what this September 1st has turned into?
Well, first of all, it's a great thing that now it's juniors as opposed to like sixth graders getting calls at midnight, which it used to be not necessarily calls, but like, you know, their coaches getting, I'm glad that it's gotten more rational and more humane and that we wait till these kids can, you know, logically think better for themselves. So that's a good thing. It's exciting. I mean, it's across all sports. I'm seeing it. I cover different sports too, besides just softball. And it's been fun to see, you know, the coaches and the players going back and forth and getting excited. But it's just the start, right? So we don't, you know, I hope recruits are keeping a little perspective that if they don't get the quote unquote call they've wanted, it doesn't mean anything in terms of like, you won't get it, but it's always a fun time because it's just, you know, the coaches get excited. They're all amped up. I've talked to a lot this week that they just seem like they've, you know, chugged a few Red Bulls, you know, like that first day. And then by the end, they're probably exhausted. But it's a different one too, because this summer they haven't been able to get out and see these kids in person. I mean, they've had to do it all through webcams, and some have just decided that, oh, who cares? Like, why even web? Like, it's just not worth it because you can't see anything. So it's been a very different recruiting landscape because they haven't been allowed to see kids in person. Most of them they have scouted like last summer probably, but you know, it's a change for both the recruits and the coaches. So it's a little bit more stressful of a September 1st than we've had in a long time because of that dynamic.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. And the important thing here is these recruits that maybe didn't get that call at midnight, they are dealing with, you know, extenuating circumstances. And, you know, I watched a few of these web broadcasts with some of these players, and, you know, it's hard to find the jersey numbers. It's hard to know who's playing where. And so the recruiting landscape is so much different this year. And I would encourage those kids to just keep working at it and know that this is not the end of it. It's just merely the beginning, but exciting to see some commits come across to various colleges and know that we're going to be talking about this probably all fall. With that said, getting into fall workouts, we've got a few teams that have started practice or in individuals. A lot of them are individuals at the moment. I haven't spoken to any coach that's in team practice yet, obviously, due to COVID. But Rhi, what are your thoughts regarding the new COVID protocols, and what have you heard across the nation in terms of speaking to coaches?
Well, it's very different, but it's different wherever you are, what conference you're in. I'm in SEC country, and they're just like out here, it's kind of a little bit more willy-nilly. Like they have protocols in place, but they're a little bit more, you know, less conservative. You know, they're taking a little bit more risk in a you know, dangerous sense, but just have a little bit more, like they're going to try to play a lot of the fall sports here still in the SEC. So some of those teams are getting to actually get on the field in a more softball, like, you know, they won't be, I've talked to SEC coaches, they're not allowed to play teams from other, you know, they won't have fall ball in the strictest sense. They'll get to do inter squad stuff and, you know, play against each other, which some conferences may not even be able to do that. So it kind of depends where you are, what conference you're in, as we've seen, much like you basically, if you look at how football is operating with the SEC, ACC, Big 12 going forward, most of those softball programs are probably going to have a little bit more ability to do stuff on the field. But I think most are still going to be able to get in some sort of workouts. It's not going to be, you know, nothing, but it's just going to really depend on what area of the country you're in and what conference you're in and We've seen a lot of these rules come out where it's basically like, you know, fall ball is going to just kind of just be within your own team. If there is a fall ball, it's not going to be playing anyone, even in the region. It's just, it's already, you know, pretty much, unless something drastically changes, which I don't expect. It's going to be a lot of like self-work, you know, which, hey, that's better than, you know, not being on the field at all. So I think coaches and players are just going to have to be really, you know, fluid and try to find the positives out of just, you know, getting what they can, where they can. But it's different everywhere across the country, and it'll continue to be that way. And it'll be very, I think the, you know, day-to-day and fluid are words that I've heard and seen and used a lot in these last few months.
And some of it has to do with county restrictions. So your conference will have one thing, but if you're in a different county, I know I talked to MJ at UNC and the associate head coach there, MJ Fernbach, and she was saying that, you know, they're on county restrictions, so it depends on what the county decides. So I think this is going to be really interesting when it plays out throughout the fall, as you said, Bree, because certain teams are going to have an advantage. They're going to be able to hold more practice. They're going to be on the field, whereas I spoke to Tori Tyson just a few days ago at Howard. They're not even on campus, so they're doing workouts at home. So I think fall ball and dealing with this COVID restrictions is going to be really interesting to track here in the next couple of months. And then with that said, looking into the fall, we've got big rosters. We've got, you know, a lot of kids on the rosters, and we've had some big time transfers during the summer. Who are your biggest transfers that you're looking at to make an impact this fall?
Wow, gosh, that's a loaded question. You have your transfer tracker, right? I mean, you've got them all lined up. That's just, it's crazy out there. It's in a good, good and bad. I mean, we were talking about Jana Johns earlier going from South Carolina. That's a player that, I don't think I call her underrated, but she was one that, you know, in the SEC sometimes got lost in the shuffle. That's a huge transfer. I know you had some that you were really keeping an eye on. I don't want to steal those thunder. Maddie Banks is one.
Yeah.
All summer, but why don't you give me some of yours? Cause I don't want to.
Yeah, looking at Maddie Banks, Virginia Tech to Ole Miss. She was great in the FGCL this summer down in the Florida Gulf Coast League. I got to watch her play. She's super athletic, and I think that's going to be a big pickup for Jamie Traxel, the new head coach over there at Ole Miss. And then another interesting transfer in the Pac-12, it's Marissa Schultz. She's going from Arizona to Arizona State. So that will be something to watch. You don't typically see that, but that'll be interesting. Arizona State has been really on the upswing in the Pac-12. They've got a pair of national championships, and look for them to challenge, those powers over there. But those are the three that we kind of talked about. And it's just, you know, the transfers are going crazy. We've got, you know, four more entered today and a lot of destination schools. So check out our transfer tracker on D1 Softball. Our subscribers have access to that. So any new transfer that enters a portal and their new destination school is in there as well. All right, yeah. Moving along here. Go ahead.
No, I just think you know, it was already a trend before the pandemic, you know, transfers, and given, you know, the eligibility that you're gaining back, that it was no surprise that it's going to, and it'll probably, I would imagine, for another cycle or two, it's going to still be a lot of movement, you know, because of those roster sizes. It is what it is now in college sports. And I think, you know, we're softball, there's other sports where you don't have, like softball, you don't have to sit out. Other sports now, they're trying to pass that where everyone can just, so it's all like legislated one thing. So I think, you know, that's just going to be a topic in college sports that everyone's going to, pretty soon, it's always going to be something that's going to be, we're going to have to watch. But even now, more so because of these roster sizes. And you could, honestly, I expect more maybe once, if we, you know, fingers crossed, games come, once people realize that their spot's been taken or like, oh, I'm not getting time, I think we're going to see another uptick as the season starts. So definitely, like you said, just keep paying attention. My philosophy of transfers are, you know, if you're not happy, feel, you know, that's your right to transfer. I mean, I'm totally fine. It's your, you only get 4 years, you know, five sometimes, and now with the COVID.
Six.
There is something to be said for, you know, like it depends, every individual decision. I know a lot of people don't like, you know, kind of they think is entitlement when all these kids just transfer. And there is some of that. It's an individual case by case basis. You can't make a stereotype on like one thing. But you know, it does make it interesting. I've always been kind of, you know, I was one at the beginning that like loyalty, but you see there's different situations, and sometimes it's mutually everyone's happy about it. Like with Arizona, I mean, I don't think Mike, I think he expected some of those girls to leave because he knew that there was just going to be a roster, and he was honest with them. Like, you're probably not going to play as much. And so I kind of respect those decisions when there's like, hey, it's, we don't have the time. As long as you're honest and upfront, and I think that's what every kid wants. So I just, you know, I think it's here to stay, and we just got to get used to it. And hopefully the kids make decisions that are best. And you know, people, I talked to a coach yesterday, he says, we're going to take advantage of it as much as we can, you know? So, and some are going to lose, some are going to gain. And we've seen like the Oklahoma States and Louisiana's are really love the transfers. So there's destinations. And then you got to factor in the incoming recruits too. That's another thing that you're going to factor in. So they kind of got unlucky with that, but yeah, it's whirling. This summer's been fun with that, but we'll see if it, we'll see how much it, I'm interested to see once the season starts, how many, you know, realize that they're no longer a part of the lineup, and they take flight quick.
Yeah. And speaking about their recruits, I think I spoke to a travel ball coach, and they're not even thinking about the 2023s at the moment. They're just trying to get these 2022s signed. And, like we said, we've got these massive rosters, and, you know, college coaches trying to juggle what the recruits, the, you know, returners and the COVID red shirts. I don't know. Is it going to be red shirt? Is that what it's going to be on the, is it going to just be a regular red shirt, or is there going to be a COVID red shirt next to,
I don't know. Are they going to have like a mask, like, you know, some sort of like emoji that I don't know. I honestly, it's just so weird. Cause you really can't distinguish, cause most rosters I've seen, they're listing them just, you know, like, right. Like it's all different. Like every roster's kind of, you know, she's just a senior, but we all know that. Cause I think some may decide, like, you know, some that aren't seniors that are juniors, they can still decide like, hey, I'm just done. I don't want to take that extra, you know, you don't have to decide that until you're done. So that's why I'm interested to see how that, once that happens, because like if I'm a sophomore this year, I technically have another year of eligibility given to me automatically, but you don't necessarily, that doesn't necessarily mean you'll stay 5 years. You know, you could decide once you're a senior, okay, yeah, I have that, but I'm not really going to use it. So I don't think they're putting the red shirt yet because of that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, even writing. So we're going to have a lot of red shirts and all of our publications. So it's going to be that COVID red shirt year. And moving along here, we're in our last topic before we get into our very first interview and guest, is we've been doing a top 50s program on D1softball.com. So Rhea and I got together and ranked the top 50 programs in the last decade. This was fun to do, kind of take a look at all of the programs, break down regional appearances, super regional appearances, Women's College World Series appearances, and national championships, and have a look at that and then go from there, looking at facilities and coaching staffs and player development. So we're ranking them right now on the website. I believe we're at 31 at the moment. So we've done 31 through 50. Number 50 is Oregon State, up in Corvallis. They're led by Laura Berg, former Olympian. So we've got them at 50. Then you've got Fresno State at 49. A lot of West Coast in this section. Long Beach State at 48. So have a look at it. You can go in through, see their location, conference, get an idea of what they've done in the past decade. And then Ree's been pulling out some really great features from this list. What would you say right now, Ree, has been your favorite of this list to write about?
Oh gosh, they've all been fun. I mean, I really can't pick one. And to be honest, I'm not just teasing this to tease it. Like, there's some ahead that are just epically funded to that. I was like, I never knew this happened during this decade. Cause now that it's, you know, the decade, you, there's some stories that once the World Series is over, you kind of just move on. And it's been fun. I didn't want to keep it really the same. So I asked, you know, I took different angles to each, you know, picked a program within each group of five. And then once we get to the top 10, I'm going to try to do, you know, even more, like more than just one out of that group. No, it's been fun. You know, like Long Beach State, we had they adopted a cancer patient that was, that's the whole decade, which is not, I mean, those things sometimes last that long. And she was actually UNLV, like, cause their assistant coach is who, you know, went to Long Beach State. She came back. And so she kind of adopted them once she left because she still like was a close connection with her. So you got to read that one on her. And that was just really sweet. Cause like, she's been there the whole decade and they have a Jenna day. You know, even today we're taping this on a Wednesday. You know, Northwestern never had a lefty until Michelle, their pitching coach, showed up, and that had been like 20 years or something. And they'd never had a lefty pitcher. So that's a good one to read about because you would have thought like, okay, maybe one, you know, even though the percentage is 10% of the world that are lefties. Yeah, all of them have been really, I mean, we had Boston University, you know, I was looking at some of the majors these kids are in and I was just like, I couldn't do that even if I didn't like, I don't know, like even if I went to school and like didn't have any other outside activities, I would never be able to finish that major, and they're doing it with softball. And that's kind of a selling point for them. They say, hey, we'll, you know, academics, a lot of people say academics comes first and then reality strikes once you get on the roster and the coach says, no, you can't miss practice. You know, Ashley over at BU actually texts and says, don't come to practice, go to your, you know, take time to study, which you would hope a lot of coaches do, but let's be realistic, not all of them do. And she's also has perspective. She says, we're not going to win a World Series. They'd love to, they try to, but she knows like our kids come here to get an education and we're going to be as good as we can be, but not ever strive from that. So that's another one. But again, I mean, they're just, it's so fun talking to these coaches and, you know, former players, because, you know, it's easier to talk about stuff that's in the past because they're a little bit more free with it. So some of the information I'm getting is just really fun and interesting, and it's always fun to reflect, but they all have great stories, all unique. We're looking for, I mean, there'll be one coming up next week that let's just say involves wrestling. So that should be interesting that you can look forward to, a coach who wrestled. So, and the whole team was there to watch. In fact, there was 13,000 people there to watch.
Yeah, I can't wait for that one.
It's not easy, man. Top 50 is not easy to break down. And I have enjoyed, you know, asking where are we on this list? Where are we? And, you know, just, so it's been fun, especially now we don't have much to, you know, there's really no quote unquote softball going on in college. So it's kind of a fun little, you know, the list type things are fun. People can go back and forth, but it's also interesting just to reflect on how good these programs have been. You know, I mean, we remember and then we're like, oh yeah, they did do all that. That's pretty amazing. And how consistently successful they are.
Yeah. And that's a good point to note, because this list is derivative of the entire decade. So what we're looking at is, you know, how they've done over time. And I think it's funny, you know, some of the programs that we've ranked, they said, you know, we're at this number, but, you know, we're not satisfied. We want to be higher, which is great. But how they're ranked is due to postseason appearances. So, you know, you've got an Ole Miss who historically hasn't been as strong, but in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, they've improved significantly and they've had 4 postseason appearances and then going to super. So I'm excited to see what they do. And you've got your Nebraska's set, you know, legendary coach Rhonda Revelle. They're at 31. So stay tuned for the rest of the list. And we're going to do something pretty special for the top 10. So stay tuned for that. All right. Moving along, we have our first guest of the D1 Softball Podcast. Our first guest, MJ Knighton, the new head coach at University of San Diego. Take it away, Ree.
Yeah, MJ, how are you doing today? Thanks for joining us on the first inaugural guest. This is a big prize we should probably send you at some point.
I will love that, honestly. And I'm doing good, and I'm thankful to be on here, and I can't wait to, you know, see where this goes.
Yeah, so obviously, as we were saying, University of San Diego, Just hired officially announced last Friday. One of those, it's actually a nice Friday drop, you know, news drop, we call those. Just your feelings. Now, obviously, we'll kind of make it, you're age 25, so you're the youngest Division I head softball coach in the country. You are the first Black female coach in the history of USD, which is pretty amazing. Yeah. Given all those constructs, what was your reaction when you got the job, when they called you and told you that you had been selected?
Honestly, by you naming all those things off, and it's already Wednesday from my last announcement, it's crazy. It's crazy when you name that off, honestly. But when they told me and made the announcement, I was emotional, of course, very grateful. And I was scared a little bit. I mean, being young and kind of just jumping with both feet in, I was scared. But I knew who I had in my corner that kind of helped me ease into it a little bit more. And nothing changed since the 3 months that I was helping lead these girls during the summer and during this quarantine. So I just had to kind of think that way and hopefully transition over into what I'm doing now that I have the title.
And we had talked earlier, we have a story on the site about you that's going to be up that readers are going to read. And I had talked about, you know, just you being very honest and open with yourself and kind of what these challenges are. Given to the nature of this, where you're coming into it, not just, you know, all those things, but you're also doing it in a state where you don't know, like, what the season's going to look like, what your fall is going to look like with the, you know, coronavirus pandemic. Yeah. How is that all, like, how are you trying to move forward with that, being that, you know, that's just more stuff of unknowns added on? How have you approached that as a coach with all the unknowns?
Yeah, we haven't really put it in our heads. We're avoiding trying to put that thought of the unknown in our head. So we're going forward like we're about to play tomorrow and we're about to play February. We're not trying to, you know, plan the what ifs. And slowly some of our girls are coming back onto campus, hopefully mid-September, fingers crossed. But we're still working that direction of, if we are playing tomorrow, we're ready to go. So we're not trying to be caught up in what's happening in the news. We're trying to stay within our bubble and keep things moving and keep this ship moving the best that we can. So it's easy to be, you know, unsure, but that's not what we're doing. Me and the rest of the girls are sure about where we're trying to go as a program. And so we're just going to run with that and see where this goes.
MG, you're experienced, you've been in coaching 3 years, two of those is kind of graduate assistant, and, you know, but what do you feel like your strengths are that you bring? I mean, a lot of people focus on the inexperience, but what do you feel like makes you, you know, why you're qualified enough to get this job, and what you think maybe your youth is a strength as to bring to this team?
Yeah, I think my energy is something that I've always been known for since I was playing at a young age into my college career, and even when I got a chance to be a graduate assistant at Wichita State. My energy, you know, I ride on that. And that's what I feel like is going to fuel a lot of these girls, to know that you're there for them and that you're going to be in their corner every single day. So that's something that I definitely will bring, that I know I can bring every day. Regardless of everything, is just learning. And I'm a sponge. So I'm learning every step of the way. I'm learning new things, you know, calling my mentors, calling people that are not even my mentors. I'm just constantly being a sponge. And I think that's what being a young coach is all about, is being that sponge. And hopefully when I get older, still be that sponge, because that's when the real work and all the good magic from all that work starts to really show.
And you, when you talked about reaching out to people and, you know, getting their advice throughout the whole process, but then the reaction once you did get the job, you were telling me there's a lot of people you played maybe like a few games with were even like, you know, whether social, and now with social media, that's a great thing. There's more people able to kind of, you know, get in contact with you. Take us through some of the, you know, some of the things you heard from people like the day it was announced.
Oh my gosh, the support. I know one of them was Aubrey Monroe, who was a great Florida Gator and on the U.S. national team, saying only got to play one summer with her, but that one summer was very special. And kind of hearing that, the fact that I, you know, impacted that person in just one summer, in just 3 months, meant a lot to me. And I know Holly Rowe quote tweeted it out, and it was awesome. And I know some of my friends were freaking out and going nuts about it. And I never even spoke to Holly Rowe before, but the fact that she had the willingness to reach out and say congrats meant a lot. And it it's just great. I never would have thought I would get that much love and support when that announcement came out, but I did, and I'm very grateful for it.
And on that note, we're going to send our prayers to Holly Rowe, who was in the wobble. She was in a bike accident. She hurt her arm, apparently, trying to film and bike at the same time, which I do not recommend to anyone. She's okay, but just we're sending healing prayers to the wobble for her, the WNBA coverage. We'll kind of end on this. And you were telling me, too, during – you were obviously the interim head coach during this time, kind of trying to guide this team through – a lot of unknowns. And so there's been a lot of Zoom meetings like everyone's having. And you, like any great coach, you stole an idea from another coach, which was Patty Gasso, about the cooking competitions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through like what's taking place with the team and maybe who's the best cook on this team that you've discovered.
So the best cook will probably be one of our seniors and another of our transfer juniors. One of our seniors made lumpia for us, which was great. She made it kind of a dessert type of lumpia, which is one of her in her culture that they're really known for. And then Alex, our transfer junior, made spam musubi, and it was like perfect spot on that you put in a restaurant. So those were the two that were the highlight. And then there was one that made the DiGiorno pizza, like just showed us how to go step by step on the box. But it was good. And it got to like everyone laughing and being good spirits. And we're kind of doing that now. Not so much right now. We're mostly talking about what's going on in the world with race and diving into, so you want to talk about race, diving into that book. Because a lot of them don't know how to really approach it. So we're just trying to learning and figuring that out. So that way they become more confident with everything that's happening in the world right now.
Well, we appreciate you, you being our first guest. We're going to, like I said, we have a story up. We hope people read it. It's kind of a compliment to this. There'll be stuff in there that we didn't discuss because we want to save it. You know, we got to save it for the site. But we'll definitely have you back, and we appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, what a great interview, MJ. That was so great. Thanks, Ree. So great to have her as our first guest, youngest coach to be hired. And she is just a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, man, she was a player, man. You know, All-American, Nebraska third baseman, the first four-time All-Big Ten in that program's history. So it was always fun watching her play. And obviously that family's got a really rich softball tradition that's very strong. So really excited to see what she does there. And just you can feel her energy coming through. So, I'm happy for her and happy for USD. And just hoping this season, that she gets to have a season. Let's just hope that. Like, it's going to be – it's perfect, though. You know what? If you're going to have a first season, might as well have it, you know, the crazy one to get out of the way, right? Just kind of – it'll teach her a lot of things right off the bat.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens down there in San Diego. All right, looking into our last segment, we've got a new pro sports model, Athletes Unlimited. Their inaugural season was this last weekend. The AU model is based on individual points. So I think I tweeted this earlier. Thank goodness Danielle Laurie understands the points, because even as a former player and a coach, it's hard to figure out who gets what and when they gets what. I know it's really important to win the inning. You get 10 points for hits. Obviously, home runs are worth, I think, a little bit more. Very different pro model than what we've seen in the past. Ree, what are your initial thoughts regarding the first weekend, and did you get to catch any of these games?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, anytime softball is anywhere, you know, on video anywhere, I'm trying to catch it. I love the idea of having, you know, just the idea of having softball featured at this time of year, especially, and having this type of league and allowing these athletes to show just the amazing athletes they are. I mean, it's just so fun to see them get the chance to shine with all these home runs and great diving plays in the outfield, and Kat Osterman being Kat Osterman at age like 90 now. I mean, the woman is just ridiculously talented. Like I think she could be out there at 90. I'm not even saying this, like she'll still strike out like two or three every inning. So I really love the idea that it's getting attention and it's getting out there. We're getting to see these players. They're feasibly, we're hoping like the income, getting paid, it'll generate, because that's part of it, is it's kind of up to them too, to, they get a certain amount, but then anything above, you know, they can generate, they get that money. That's all a great thing for, you know, softball, female athletes, everything. I do hope, though, I know a lot of people I saw saying, like, this is what we should just, this should just be the league, we, you know, softball, how they do it. I want this to be a complement to a regular league. I'm still a big believer in having a team that lasts an entire season as opposed to just three games. I think it's a fun thing. I think it's, you know, unique and interesting, and it keeps it just like, it changes it up. Right. And it's fun for that. But I do still want, I know NPF still out there that needs to change its model a little bit to be successful. We've seen, I'm hoping that there can be a sustainable league comparable to Major League Baseball at some point, obviously on a smaller scale, that has everyone working in its favor and not working against each other. Because I do believe in the value of team sports, you know, just in its all encompassing season. So I really love it. I think it's great. I think they could complement each other. I think this could have people sustain that fandom, but I do hope that, that we can also have a regular league that doesn't require, that doesn't like really, you know, want, I'm all for gambling, but I feel like a lot of people are just like, oh, the gambling possibilities with this. And I know you have to factor that in with finances, but I, being an athlete, it's like, that's cool. But like, I really want just the sport too, you know, like I don't just want to do everything to cater just to money. But I know that has to be a practicality of it. So I'm kind of like, let's just have this as a great compliment. And then maybe it can, you know, piggyback off this to have a more sustainable, regular, quote unquote, regular league, which is where you and I are teammates for like 7 months. We bond, we're in the clubhouse together, you know? So yeah, like I said, I love it. I think it's great. I hope it stays, but I hope it's just one of two things we have in America that's a choice for softball.
I agree. And there's a couple things that I would like to see AU address. And one of those is defensive points. I mean, I don't know if you saw some of these plays that were being made on defense. How do you not get points for that? Whether it was,
it's like, you know, fantasy, it's like fantasy football, gosh forsaken, like these running back. And like, you know, the defenses are like left on the side. I get so irritated. I'm like, cause I'm like you, I was a center fielder, you know, there's so many good plays. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you got McClinney out there making a great play, Janie Reed, Wiggins in the outfield. But then I say MVP, defensive MVP. I think she was named MVP, was Alicia Ocasio. I mean, how she gets off the mound, it's such an advantage in the infield because – you're able to actually stick and be at your position well knowing that she has so much range. I mean, there was a ball that was hit, I think, down the first baseline. She picked it up, threw it on the other side of the runner, and it was one of the most athletic plays I'd seen all weekend, other than AJ Andrews in the outfield making the diving play in foul territory, doing AJ Andrews things, I think is what they were saying on their Twitter. But I'd love to see defense. And then another idea would be to have a hypothetical bunting grid in front of the plate, because bunting is not as I don't think you get any points for a sack bunt. Do you get a point for a sack bunt? I don't know. But I would love to see a grid in front of home plate that you get points, because that's what we do at practice. When you're bunting, you draw a grid in the dirt and you get, you know, 1, 2, 3 points if you have a perfect bunt. So those are the two things.
There's no launch angles in bunts, so why the hell do you even bother? My tongue is firmly in my cheek when I say that. There's no damn launch angle with your bunt, so, like, what's the point, right? Like, come on. No, I'm with you. I think those are all great. And hopefully, you know, this is the inaugural of the inaugural AU. Like, there's volleyball coming. So this is kind of a guinea pig, right? So I'm hoping that, you know, they're – and the players have a lot to say. I mean, it's a player-run thing, and it's a lot of senses. So hopefully that – you know, they're just, this is the experimental phase. So I'm hoping that, yeah, like you, some of that's incorporated because, yeah, I mean, those are just some just extraordinary athletes that you mentioned, Ocasio and Andrews. And the cool thing about AU is like, we're D1 softball. I mean, there's obviously a few D2, D3 players out there, but all these players went to college and played. So that's the cool thing we have going for us. Like if we were talking with some baseball, some of them just go right to it. So we can always follow this league and be confident that D1 softball is going to be a big thing in there. And I'm sure there's a lot of good and bad, you know, talking about different alma maters and kind of all these things and different conferences within those, I'm sure, in the clubhouse. And we saw the swag, who's going to send their, you know, college's swag down to Chicago area so they can wear it. So it's been fun to see the colleges get involved and tweet about their own players and tweet the, you know, so it's always good when softball can come together to promote each other.
Yeah, and with that said, we'll look at the leaderboard. So this week, each week there's new captains of the league. And we've got Kat Osterman. She had the most total points with 604. She got 120 MVP points, the most out of anybody, 340 win points, and then 144 stat points. So she really got a lot of points on those wins and the MVP. Then next we've got Samantha Shao. She had 100 MVP points, 210 on the win, 214 on the stat points for a total of 524 points. Then we've got Victoria Hayward. She's at 490. And then the last captain, Alicia Ocasio, at 464. So this week we've got four brand new teams. Again, they've done the draft yesterday, and we should see those new teams again. And it'll be interesting because as you switch in teams, you're on a different team with, you know, different middle infielder, a different outfielder, a different catcher. And I know Kat chose Gwen Svetkis as her first pick. So it'll be interesting to see these pitcher-catcher combos and how that progresses.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, it's interesting and fun because it's new. I think that's a cool part. I really am all for it. It keeps it fresh. So I'm all for this. I really think it's a cool format. I mean, again, we all know, you know, we're inherently team. When you're on a team, it's the individual part is always, but I think there's enough of where you come together as a team where it's not like completely selfish. You know, they've built it in so you don't just be like me. You need your teammates to help you get the points. So I was worried about that at first when I first heard of this idea, but as I'm seeing it, it's not as, you know, it doesn't seem as selfish as I thought there would be a tendency to, but as we said, I hope this is just kind of, you know, we can have softball almost year round in a sense, if we can have this be this part of the summer and then have a regular pro league, that's the regular team dynamics to change it up and make it for everyone. You have something for everyone. And that's what we need. We just need more representation out there as much as possible on TV and the media talking about it, following it. And I think it's a natural from, you know, there's a lot of talk why fans of the college teams don't, you know, follow pro women's league softball because they get so enthralled with these players. So this could maybe change that. Maybe you could find a player that you really, even if you're not a fan of college in a sense, you could find a player from this league you really latch onto, and then you follow them into another pro league that they're on a regular team. So, I mean, I'm hoping for that kind of dynamic to emerge, because we need that. We need that with every women's sports. We're seeing, we've, you know, basketball's got some traction. We're seeing it with women's soccer. So softball is such a fun sport to watch. And I think we just need to get it out there more and show people how great of athletes these players are.
Yeah, and this is merely the springboard. I think what I love about this league is that it is focused on the individual. And I think young softballers are starting to know who's on Team USA. They're starting to know who's on Team Mexico, Team Canada. So that is one of the great aspects that it is bringing to the table. And I'm loving the mic'd up series, like Tori Vidalis with the mic. I love having that be part of it. So getting kind of that in-depth look in the dugout, on the field. And I can't wait to see what happens in the weeks to come. So with that said, I think that's the close of our first podcast.
Wow, look at that. It's a historical milestone here. It's going to live forever. People are going to go back to this. This is awesome. The first D1 softball podcast in the books.
Oh, I love it. Well, more to come. Tara Henry, Brandon Potke for D1 Softball. Check us out on d1softball.com. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook, anywhere else you can think of.
Twitter.
On Twitter. How can people find you on Twitter?
At R Potkey, R-P-O-T-K-E-Y. That's a hard one, but yeah, at R Potkey. That's my Twitter handle.
Perfect. And I'm, I love another hard one, at No Terrible Days. So A-N-O-T-A-R-A-B-L-E-D. DAYS. That's where you can find me. But find us on D1 Softball at D1 Softball on Twitter, and let us know what you think. Thanks so much, Ree, and have a great week.
You too. Until next week, we'll talk to you then.
All righty. That's it for our first D1 Softball podcast. Mm-hmm.